Blog Talk Radio.
Oh, that's great. That sounds terrific. Thank you.
Marvin Gaye, because I had to agree, what is going on? The World Health Organization calls West Africa's Ebola epidemic an international public health emergency, as doctors and officials in the region reported a spike in cases over the past 2 days that has overwhelmed major AIDS organizations. So While that's going on in West Africa, here in the States, the Center for Disease Control has issued the highest level alert for response to the Ebola crisis in West Africa. Basically, the Op Center moved to level one response given the extension to Nigeria and its potential to affect many lives, the CDC said via Twitter on Wednesday. Basically, a level one means that increased staff and resources will be devoted to the outbreak, officials said. It is the first time the agency has invoked the highest level alert since 2009 over the flu outbreak. So that's what we're talking about tonight. We're talking about the Ebola virus. And I have literally been glued to my computer all day today with information being poured on me about this particular virus. And for some reason, a lot of people are casually looking at the Ebola virus as if it's in West Africa, so we in the States don't have reason for concern, but we do. We do because two Americans that were AIDS workers over in Liberia have been brought to the States. They came one Saturday and I believe one on Wednesday to Emory University Hospital in Atlanta to be treated for the Ebola virus. So it's closer than we think. And so a lot we're going to learn tonight, and I'm learning as well, about this virus and basically how it originated, where it originated, and a lot of other facts that maybe you had not heard about the Ebola virus. But tonight my guest is going to tell us a lot, and that's Dr. Randy Short is with us. And on board, as always, is Mr. A.J. Houston and Christopher Vaughn. So I'm going to open up everybody's phone line. Good evening, everybody.
Good evening, Carrie.
Good evening, A.J.
Yeah, how's everybody doing?
Hey, AJ, is that you? Good evening, everyone. I'm struggling this evening because there's so much information to put out there, and Mr. Short is only going to be with us for the first hour, so I'm struggling to try to put it all together. And AJ, I believe, is only going to be with us for the first hour, so I'm struggling to put it all together. I see a 661 number that's already lit up. I'm not sure if this is another person that I invited to be on our panel tonight. I don't know. Mr. Short, is my other guest on the 661 area code?
No.
Okay. 661, I'll come to you shortly. But tonight, you all, we're talking about the Ebola virus. And so we're talking about where did it originate from? What is it that we know about Ebola already? Before, you know, it became this outbreak as of a couple of days ago, what is it that we already know about Ebola? Mr. Short, I'll start with you. Or Dr. Short, I'll start with you.
I will say this, so everyone will know this. I am not a biologist or a geneticist or virologist or medical doctor. I am a doctor in African and African-American history. And so I just want to say that I'm not a medical doctor.
Yeah.
And so my methodology for looking at this will be very different from someone who's going to simply tell you about the genomic sequence of Ebola and everything else. There are certain things that I know very well, and there are things that I don't know as well because normally I don't look at public health, at least this dimension, epidemics, epidemiology. I just want to put that out there. So if I make sweeping generalizations and simplistic things, it isn't to obscure, hide, or to pretend I have information that it's not in my area of expertise. It's because what I know about will be historic information that pertains to human experimentation, to eugenics, to white supremacy, to social Darwinism, and other hegemonic agenda that are well documented that will show people who are willing to think that we've been here and seen and experienced all this before. It's a new, different name, same thing. And I want to start off by saying Ebola is not new. It was an Ebola outbreak in the 70s, which means Ebola is about 40 years old. So it's not a strain of Ebola that they're talking about. as I shared with you, Sister Carrie, was invented in the United States in the early 2000s, so between 2007, 2008 or 9, and they applied for a patent in 2009, and they have a patent for the current Ebola that everyone's screaming about. That was received in 2012. So I want to start off by saying, if it was invented in Atlanta, Georgia, and there's a patent for it, and there's also a company that has worked on a vaccine and has been working on this vaccine for about 3-4 years, then the public is being screwed. Yes, there's a deadly disease, and yes, we know who made it. We know that this, if this disease was made in Atlanta, how did it end up in Liberia and Guinea and Nigeria, unless it was taken there? And if it was in isolation and it's something that's patented because someone has sole proprietary access and right to it, it means people who made it available to people in Africa. In their patent request, they mentioned that they were looking for primate subjects to experiment on to see if immunity could be developed to it. That's what you saw, sister. And you can, folks want to email me or want to email you, we can prove that. So we don't even have to go anywhere. This was invented. The government says so.
Wow. Christopher
now,
Barnes.
Let's do one more thing.
Oh, I'm sorry.
We go to that same document. The scam that everyone has been told for decades is Ebola, again, another one of these monkey diseases. Africans eating monkeys or having sex or doing something with monkeys, like with AIDS, another invented virus, which has a cure. If you go to Google and put in cure for AIDS and put in caps and patent, you'll find the patent will jump up saying that this government has given a patent for a cure for AIDS. It's existed since about 2009, if I'm correct. So, I mean, please. Now, saying all that, we have a history of eugenics. We have a history of human experimentation that goes on and on. I sent you, sister, something on pellagra, where they let thousands of black women die from pellagra when they knew there was a cure. That was before Tuskegee. Tuskegee came later. And coinciding with Tuskegee was the Negro Project, which was meant to wipe out black people, Margaret Sanger, who, by the way, the same people funding Margaret Sanger's Negro Project are the same people funding Tuskegee. And this goes on and on and on. And what happened in the United States is when Tuskegee was found out, everyone knew, and I need to say this, why is there silence? What I need to say to everybody is the black elite is in on this. The National Medical Association was deeply involved in Tuskegee. Everything that happened to those hundreds, in fact, what many people do not know is there were several hundred black women that were in the Tuskegee experiment as well. You only hear about the men. So you need to understand that even when it comes to very basic information, and they deliberately let the women get infected too. So the number of people involved in Tuskegee is actually over 1,000 people, and there may have been children. And this information, by the way, is all kept by the CDC, which is also in Atlanta. So it's interesting, when the two white people came home, they took them to where the disease originated.
And where do you say the patent came from?
It's patented in Atlanta, CDC. It's several scientists. I don't remember everybody's name. I'm multitasking. I'm making some jello, but I know what I'm talking about. if they want, my email is wrandyshort@gmail.com. I'll send you what I got off the Internet like any other person that searches. I'm a Christian, by the way. It says, he that hungers and thirsts for righteousness will be filled. If you seek the truth, it will be there. Okay?
Thanks.
So this, there's no reason at all. One, we should be alarmed. But we need to understand that this human experimentation, Ebola, is small. How many people die from Ebola? Less than 1,000. Less than 1,000 people die from Ebola. Now, and that's in multiple countries. I mean, Nigeria's got 170-some-odd million people. You know, about hundreds of millions of people, and you have like a few hundred deaths. That's not an epidemic. I believe that this is being used as an excuse.
So why are we hearing the word epidemic if it's less than 1,000 people?
Well, I mean, there were weapons of mass destruction. There are people with box cutters. The history changed. There's been a consistent manipulation, abuse, and stripping of our rights for now going on 14 years. And it's accelerated with this first black president that I guess everybody voted for on this call but me. Okay, and I went to Harvard with him at the same time. I feel sorry for people who've been boondoggled. This man is an agent for bringing our demise. And you just look at Libya, you look at Boko Haram, where people are being mass killed with American Israeli support. It's amazing. There's nowhere in the world where I see black folks where they're not being destroyed since January 2009. Not that we didn't have problems before, but they've seemed to accelerate. You tell me that George Bush could get away with not providing water to blacks in Detroit, the way that black folks have been silent about this. I mean, I can go on and on. President Obama saying that it's too soon. If it's really an epidemic, why wouldn't they send treatment to the people in Africa? Why did he say no in the midst of having an African summit with 50 leaders from Africa? I mean,
okay, so
folks don't see. It doesn't matter the wording. He said no. He did the same thing for Haiti when they had the earthquake and people in the rubble dying. Obama refused to let people in to save tens of thousands of lives. We keep seeing this time and time and time again, and folks want to make him Jesus. It's sad.
Okay, let's be clear. So those who don't know what you're talking about, when you say he said no to sending aid over to West Africa, somebody may have not heard that.
For Ebola, the same thing that saved the two white people, they refused to send to Africa. Refused. The president, the same one that had to be pushed to talk about Trayvon, the same one that never steps up for anything black until he's forced, is prompt and forthright to say no. He was prompt to send bombs to kill another group of black folks in Gaza. I mean, $225 or $50 million to kill people, and there's a chance to save life, and the answer is no.
Oh, we're talking about two or three, four, five, six different shows tonight. Wait. Let's stay on topic because we know you're only going to be with us a short period of time. So as far as the Ebola outbreak is concerned, you feel the term epidemic is too strong.
Of course, because in reality, I'll just give you an example. In 2005, we had a heat wave. About 700 black folks died in the city of Chicago from heat.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't call it an epidemic. If you're talking about Nigeria alone with somewhere between 150 to 200 million people and, mm-hmm. what, 30, 20 die? Boko Haram, mm-hmm. with American tax money, has killed several hundred people, and that's not, mm-hmm. an epidemic. Mm-hmm. South Africa has 110,000 children die before the age of one every year, which means in a couple of months, several thousand children die. That's not an epidemic. Children die. Each year, 16 million children die due to waterborne illness, which means that a million children die every month or more, and yet that's not an epidemic. So why is this few hundred such an interest? How come other things that are far more deadly that are occurring are not an epidemic, in particular for our community? I mean, it's amazing why this thing that is owned by the CDC, that's invented by the CDC, that was being used by the Department of Defense with Tulane University for bioweapons investigation in Africa, that's an epidemic because there's a thing called the National Defense Authorization Act that this wonderful black man that everyone worships as Jesus signed, where anything can be done to us now. So now, as our dollar collapses and all these other problems that are going on, people can use this medical thing as a reason to do whatever they want to people, force everyone to go to a FEMA camp or quarantine. Because if, in fact, you were concerned about the epidemic, which this man showed he was not, he would have said, this is an international priority. America takes the lead. We're taking over that lab, and we're going to produce enough Ebola vaccinations to stop this. This is not what's been said. That's leadership. A person who's in the pocket of Wall Street and the pharmaceutical people and others has said, let folks die. That says, that means exactly what it means. And so, you know, I'm sorry.
Hold that just a second. My co-host, AJ Houston and Christopher Bonds are lighting up the phone. They keep flashing, flipping it on and off. Okay, I'm sorry. Christopher, yeah, I see your light going on and off. Your comment.
Yes. Good evening. In terms of Ebola, what I'm having, not necessarily a problem with, but a lot of people don't read the fine print, and I think a lot of people are like Dr. Short is saying, they're buying or they're taking what is being said without real evidence. In other words, if you're going to tell me just on a logical level that the Ebola infection in terms of Africa being so the so-called origin, they're saying that they can document that the disease process or the pathogen is coming from infected chimpanzees, gorillas, bats, monkeys, and forest antelope, specifically in areas dealing like with the rainforest. Well, if that's the case, those areas are not the only areas that have rainforest in the world. So if that is the case, the direct correlation would mean that these types of animals and these types of agriculture areas, that this disease would be either naturally occurring amongst these animals, and then it is spread to humans. So that within itself doesn't make sense. So we know that it can't be true because it would have to be in any rainforest. You'd have to see some prevalence of it. The second
can
thing.
Can I add something? Can I add
yes.
something? You mentioned rainforest.
Yes,
there's a racial stereotype in that. Africans don't live in the rainforest. They live in cities primarily now. So all the places that you're hearing about the epidemic tend to be semi-urban or urban areas. So you mean a thing that's way in the rainforest, now somebody in Lagos, a metropolitan area of 25 million people, they've got a rainforest disease. I mean, it's ridiculous. But these things that they're doing, it's psychological warfare. It's based on the self-hatred and stupidity of black people that all of a sudden that you say monkey and black folks either shut down or take it without looking at where Ebola. If you look at the document that Sister Hines has, you'll find that the doctors who've invented this Ebola that is now infecting and killing people comes from bats, and they combined the bat virus with the virus in West Africa, which means that it's not in all the rainforest. It was in one specific area, and they made another Ebola and in the United States and took it back to Africa to find a combinant one with the traits of Central Africa and West Africa. That's what they wrote down to get the patent from the government, okay? So, you know, it's right there. If you just read the patent by itself, it explains it. We don't even have to get deep. Just for a lot of our people who don't like reading, why did you make it? Why did you invent it? Why did you say you're looking for how to bring the stuff together? You put it together, you get a patent, and to make money off of it for a big pharmacist. In fact, it's interesting that it comes out this year, this outbreak this year, because of Obamacare. Anybody who's making that patent, if you've been reading the papers, the people who have this vaccine, their stocks have shot through the roof, which means someone's going to become a multi-billionaire many times over off of this. And what's going to happen if, in fact, Obama is considering, if he hasn't already signed, an executive order where you can be quarantined if you have a respiratory problem. Now, what does that mean? If you don't want to have Ebola, you'll pay whatever that shot is because you can't have a job, you can't go to the store, you can't leave your house, you lose all your human rights if you have a respiratory problem. So what are they going to sell people that shot for? And but if you have Obamacare, maybe you get a copay, you come up with $500 or $1,500, and the government will pay $1,500. That way it's not a $3,000 shot because it's in limited amounts. So right away there's a scarcity. It's all manipulation. Yes, the disease is deadly. Yes, it's killing people. But what I'll say also in the fine print, Have the African health departments confirmed that all these deaths are Ebola? The answer is no. Why has the government of Sierra Leone, where I have lots of friends, said that that doctor didn't die from Ebola? Why is this lie being told to the American people? Why are we buying it? Why haven't folks looked and checked? The people in Sierra Leone wanted this experimentation ended. The people in Guinea wanted them out. The outbreak comes along with people saying, we don't like what's happening. We see more people dying. The more that they work with people, the more people die. And the other document, this, it's called Non-Consensual Human Experimentation. This has been going on in Africa for 60 years. And it also happens in prisons across this country to black men. It happens to our veterans. President Clinton signed an executive order. Whatever the army or the military injects in your buttocks, you have to take. You can't question. So this human experimentation and biowarfare is writ large everywhere, and it's been going on a long, long time. So, yes, Ebola exists because someone created this particular strain. Yes, AIDS exists because someone made it, and at the same time they made AIDS, they made something called Depo-Provera, the birth control drug of choice in Africa and for African-American women, which makes a woman 8 times more likely to contract AIDS and makes her a super carrier of the disease, and people wonder why so many blacks have AIDS. I mean, it just goes on and on. So it's, you know, we can talk about Ebola, but in the context of the human experimentation and the violation of the human rights of African people all over the planet with African-American elite doctors, our fraternal organizations, our Masonic people, all of them, black leadership, has said, as long as it doesn't happen to my kids and my family, we don't give a damn about what happens to the other black people. And that goes for all the nigger preachers in the mega churches, because anybody that would take 5 seconds, people who have enough money to take a few minutes to go on their computer and read and look, would find the same information. I know genius. They
AJ,
don't care.
Houston, AJ Houston, I see your mic on and off. Your comment.
Yeah, no, I was Now, I just want to interject something. I'm saying because, you know, ever since the smallpox, America has done experiments on different groups of people and put it as they wrote it differently because the first lie is always the truth anyway in America. And at least that's where we accept it. And I'm saying the brother got some sharp conversation, and I know a lot of things he's saying I've read, too, that are factual, but there are some other things that I'm still curious on, so I understand the swing of an argument or the swing of judgment, but I still have to reserve mine and look at, because I'm trying to pull up the papers you gave me, but I'm still going to look at some other things. But I'm saying, sharp conversation, Brother Sharp.
I got to say
America has done this historically, always, always experiment and then call it something different.
I agree. Let's go to 661748. They've been holding for a while. Good evening, 661748. You're on center stage. 661748. I think that person has their hand raised and doesn't understand the process. But I want to close your phone line back up. 661748, if you were trying to get in and I misunderstood you, flash your light on and off, and I'll come back to you. But I think what Mr. Short said or Dr. Short said, they're really was very telling, was I was reading some articles about the Ebola virus, and I understand that a lot of Africans are afraid of it. And actually, they're saying some that are infected are fleeing from medical attention as opposed to coming to it. Now, why would that be? And so that was very interesting to me. And so if we are, in fact, you know, God forbid, taking a virus of that magnitude over there and actually injecting it into people and causing, unnecessary death or death on purpose, then I can understand why the African people are afraid of, you know, us coming saying we're bearing, you know, medicine to help you. You know, so that's just mind-blowing to me. I mean, they're saying basically, you know, go figure, that the virus if someone chose to, this is what Russia was putting out today, if someone chose to, they could take the virus, put it in a spray, and use it as a bioweapon. And that just blew my mind because, you know, these things are so close to us, we're not really looking at the fact that it can happen. Because if they chose to do that, let's just say they did that, that would be an automatic reason for martial law, you know, and they could say it's for your own good. And probably 90% of the people would probably be running in the house and locking the doors and going, listen, you know, we're under martial law because they're trying to help us. And so we really got to be careful at how we look at it in terms of, you know, this Ebola virus. You know, it's small right now in terms of only killed under 1,000 persons. However, if someone decided to take it and use it as a bioweapon, overnight, things could change with this virus. And so that's the scary part about what we're looking at, because it has the potential to remain small, or, you know, if they choose to take it and use it against us.
With all due respect, none of those African countries has, with the exception of maybe South Africa and Egypt, any, or Algeria, any major bioweapons thing as part of their military. I mean, the country that has the most bio stuff is the United States. It's the only country that's dropped the bomb on anyone. It's the only country that has done this kind of stuff. They did it in Korea with bubonic plague in the 50s. This country has always done that. They did that with the Indians, with typhoid fever. I mean, this is old. I mean, forgive me. We can't be naive. When white folks want to take something or do something, they've been doing it. I mean, so this is just another case. We need to literally take more time on this than what we have. I have a whole PowerPoint with all these different cases where they're doing stuff, not just Tuskegee, where they've given people diseases, they've made people crazy. Even as you drink the water, the fluoride that's in the water mix is more twice as deadly to blacks as whites. Not only that, it absorption, it magnifies lead poisoning when fluoride is in the water. And therefore, in fact, blacks get more fluoride in. So there's a mass experimentation with that. There's a mass experimentation with things like silent weapons, like the DARPA, where they can microwave your brain like they did that sister that got shot here, or the way that they microwaved the man's brain that made him attack folks at the Navy Yard. This kind of manipulation is manifold. And who else is doing it? These African countries don't have the money, the time, or the technology to do it. This is a Anglo-American white thing against non-white people. And I need to preface why Liberia. Liberia is the only country that initially opened its doors to the United States to set up its military stuff there, AFRICOM. And Liberia was America's colony, and it still is America's colony. It's owned by the Rockefellers through their cousins, the Firestones. So, I mean, Liberia is America's colony and created to basically prevent African-American people here from being free, if you get into the history of what Liberia is all about. It is an experiment where one out of two blacks died within the first year of being resettled there from disease. So this is old, people. I'm sorry. It's boring when we beg the question. They hate us, they're killing us, and we're either too punkified or too cowardly, or we need mountains of information to prove something we already know. So Ebola is the flavor of the month of another modality of controlling and hurting us. It's just another one. I mean, we can do about five or six of these, and it will keep coming from the same scientific community. So to me, I mean, why? Why belabor it? So the answer should be, why isn't there pressure? I mean, all the black folks who have Obama T-shirts, Obama condoms, Obama drawers and toilet paper, to call their president that they worship and ask him, why won't he help people in Africa? He just told these people he's the son of Africa at this African summit. But when the folks need medication for an epidemic, his government says exists. He told them, wait. It's amazing to me. If it were really an epidemic, he wouldn't wait.
You know, Dr. Short spoke of Libya, you know, being our colony a minute ago. Basically, the Libyan president.
Not Libya. That's a new colony.
I'm sorry,
I was there too. They've done human experimentation with depleted uranium on them. I was exposed to that.
Liberia, I'm sorry. Basically, the president over there has already declared a state of emergency, saying that that some of the people's, I mean, well, everybody's civil rights may be basically suspended because they're basically trying to slow the spread of the disease. Now, he just told you under 1,000 isn't really considered an epidemic. However, you know, they're already suspending some of your civil rights over there, which is technically martial law. So when you get through, that's just how quick things can change for us over here. If they say all of a sudden 400 or 500 people have died, so therefore we all need to be fearful, and you know they're going to start taking this away and taking that away so that they can protect us. That's just how quickly stuff can change. Say what? Okay. I'm going to try 661 again. I'm not sure if this person is asking to speak, but I'm going to try you one more time. 661-748. Good evening. You're on Center Stage.
Can you hear me, dear?
I can hear you.
Okay. Sorry. Before something happened, you know, sometimes we have technical problems with the Skype. So I appreciate your taking my call. And regarding everything you guys said, absolutely, you have a seal of my approval, indeed, because, you know, this Georgia Stone, we should not forget about it, that they have written it in 9 different languages, that said they want to maintain humanity under 500 million in perpetual balance with nature. Guide reproduction wisely, improving fitness and diversity. Unite humanity with the living new language. Rule passion, faith, tradition, and all things with tempered reason. Protect people and nations with the fair laws and just courts, like a new world order. And let us let all nations rule internally, resolving external disputes in the world court, and avoid petty laws and useless officials. Balance personal rights with social duties. Prize truth, beauty, love, seeking harmony with infinite, and be not a cancer on the earth. Leave room for nature. Leave room for nature. So. This is they already told us exactly what they want to do with us. Do you have any comments, any of your speakers, please?
Am I understanding you to say, and you have to speak a little slower, am I understanding you to say this is like Agenda 21 under the New World Order, how they want to get rid of 5 billion of us? Is that what I understood you to say?
No, Georgia Stone is in Georgia. They built it. And it's written in 9 languages. And these are the 10 things they have said that they will make us to do. They want to make the population of the world under 500 million people in order to be balanced with the nature. Number 2 is guide reproduction wisely, improving fitness and diversity. And they want to unite all humanity with a single new language. And rule of passion, faith, tradition, and all things with tempered reason. Protect people and nation with the fair laws and just not courts. And let all nations rule internally, but resolving their problems in the world international court. So this is the same as the world government. They want to bring world government. They want to get rid of 90% of the world populations.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is what they're telling us already. In the Georgia Stones, that it's made in Georgia, United States of America.
Okay, so it's something called the Georgia Stones is what you're saying, am I understanding
yes.
you correctly? And all
yes,
of this
yes,
is written
yes, yes.
in there. Okay, and it's all written in there. So you believe that this Ebola virus was created to eliminate a bunch of us?
And the same thing, you see how much there is a war in Hamas and Israel, so many people killed, they don't care. I mean, there's so many people, are 200,000 Christians are just empty-handed right now. They are flowing everywhere they can go. Nobody cares. And until now, they say, well, we will do a little bit of airstrike. That doesn't solve the problem. They don't care for Christians. They don't care for anybody. They want wars, Ebola, and AIDS, and everything else to be imposed on the humanity. These people are very dangerous.
I agree. Does anybody have a question for the caller? I agree. 100%. I agree, caller. Thank you very much. I got to look up the Georgia Stone. I've never heard of that before. But, I think it is totally in order for us all to start thinking along the lines of understanding better what the New World Order says, because we are absolutely every day living that. And if you Google Agenda 21, we are living it. Agenda 21 is how they plan to implement the New World Order. We are living that. And as the caller just said, getting rid of a whole bunch of us is part of the plan under Agenda 21. When you start hearing terms like sustainability, you better back up and pay attention. Sustainability is New World Order talk. I mean, so we're not paying attention. That just basically, we're not paying attention to the signs that are right in front of us. And so when we're looking at the Ebola virus, let's talk a little bit about what to expect just in case we see someone with it. Hopefully we won't get it, but if we see someone who does look like they may have the virus, maybe we'll know the signs. Basically, we're understanding that it would include fever, sore throat, muscle pain, headaches, often nausea, vomiting, diarrhea, and that will typically follow internal bleeding and external bleeding. That's when you're very, very, very sick, when it gets to the point of having internal and external bleeding. That's what we're understanding. So if you find yourself with these symptoms, God forbid, or someone you know has these symptoms, you should seek care. You know, but my question is, where do you go? I mean, if this is, you know, the way we're understanding it to be, they're not trying to help you get well. I mean, there is no cure for it. I'm understanding Ebola is incurable. Am I understanding that right now there is no known cure right now today? We know that
those. Disagree. Why are the two people alive in Atlanta? There is a cure. It's to frighten people. Let's just be very honest with each other. If those two people had Ebola, as we were told, and they flew them over and they survived and they're getting better, and they were given this stuff that's been developed here by the company that's based in Canada, okay, then we do see people who respond positively. What normally happens when you have an epidemic and you give a damn, you see people respond to something and you give it to them the same way for Tuskegee when the sulfur drugs and other things before, you give them something that at least people respond to. To not give it to people when you see a positive response, to me, is again says that. But we need to remember, if you invented the virus, okay, mm-hmm. if you invented it, you have weaker strains because you developed it. What they typically do is use one thing to counteract the other. So these same people who have genomically sequenced this Ebola version that they created in 2007, 2009, then they've got something that they can use on it. This is a game. This is a game. This is a game, people. And yes, please be careful. Don't get sick. But if they wanted to cure this, they can do it. In fact, proof of that is these two people that were alive that they were worried about. And so I'm thinking, and they knew exactly what to give them. As soon as they got there, they gave it to them. Now, forgive me. Why were those people who finally did get sick, why were they able to work with people with Ebola for months and they never got sick until towards the end of it? Forgive me, did they have some super immunity? Are white folks immune to it? Is it just like with AIDS where they say why white women don't get AIDS and black women seem to be susceptible to it without explaining that the World Health Organization and the USAID
and the International Federation of Planned Parenthood and the apartheid government of South Africa and the apartheid government of the United States and all these other governments have pushed Provera, which destroys the immunity of women, on black women, then this is why they die from AIDS. I mean, so, you know, sometimes we can use basic induction and you don't have to go to a medical school and be, you know, Mr. Huxtable to use some common sense. The minute that you buy into the lie that you can't think for yourself and you can't do anything because you don't have a bunch of degrees or you didn't go to Meharry or you didn't go to Harvard or whatever, that's when you cede your autonomy, your common sense to people who don't have your best interest at heart.
You know what? Let's think about the connection between it and HIV. I'll start off here, and I think Christopher and Dr. Short have some other things, but this is very, very strange, the connection. The Ebola virus is spread by direct contact with the Ebola patient's blood and other bodily fluids like urine, saliva, and sweat. The highest concentration of the virus is thought to be in the blood, vomit, and diarrhea. You know, isn't that kind of how they say about HIV? You know, so is it strange? I mean, I don't know. I'm just scratching my head here.
It's not strange. It's not strange. It fits a pattern of having a cover for how this disease spreads without talking about the epidemiology or the etiology of how this disease started. Okay, for AIDS, anybody that has a computer can go to Google and look up special cancer virus program. Anyone can look up and see that the government funded the creation of viruses right after they had a meeting. The World Bank, by the way, the president of Liberia used to work for the World Bank. The World Bank, IMF, and other people are down with population reduction. So you need to understand that. On top of that, she's an Amerikongo. And Amerikongo are the descendants of people who got sent to Liberia from the United States after 1816 by the American Colonization Society because there's a thing called the Providential Theory. The Providential Theory was if black people got free in America, they would destroy white people and America would become a barbarian country. So to save America from barbarism is to send everyone black that was free to Africa so Africa could be saved. So that's the whole origin. Francis Scott Key and all these people, white supremacists that hated black people that created Liberia. And she's from the Amerikongo who went to Liberia and enslaved and abused the African people. Okay, so this is a house nigger, okay, an African black neck house niggerette, forgive me. That's one thing you need to be very clear on. So, you know, don't just say Liberia. You need to understand the history and that black folks there literally worked instead with whites, the ones from the United States, to enslave what they call country or bush people. And by the way, W.E.B. Du Bois supported the slavery and enslavement of African people who lived in Liberia by the Americo-Liberians to show you how vicious this thing is. So, you know, let's just be completely real. When you mention Liberia, all the flags went up in my head because I know all about it or I know enough about it to be clear. You'll never meet a more confused, conflicted country in West Africa than what's going on in Liberia with folks who essentially almost see themselves almost more or less as white people in Africa. I mean, like white South Africans, the attitude that some of them used to have towards people who were there before these folks got repatriated. The same attitude exists in Sierra Leone with the Creoles, who came from both the United States and Great Britain when Britain decided it didn't want any more black people, send them to Sierra Leone and make the ones who are mixed or whatever over the other Africans. So we've got all of this history that would explain why this would happen in those specific places. They pick the weak countries that have a problem like this. If you remember, both countries were racked by civil war. It's partially connected to the privileges accorded to the people who were brought in by white folks to dominate folks who are already there. So all of this keeps mixing. So there's a confluence or convergence of black self-hatred and other things that stir this pot, okay? And I'm saying that to you as a person who's got family in Sierra Leone and family in Liberia. And it's very obvious to me the game that's being run. And so, no disrespect, we need to demand, if we know any doctors or any leaders, an explanation, not just an explanation, but demand that they send what they have to Africa. Jews would never allow, if there was an epidemic in Israel, and there was something that sort of worked here, the president wouldn't dare say no. That's a trial balloon. That's a test to see if we have any love or guts, because if Ebola got loose here, he'd say no to us dying as well. He'd say no to helping us because it's not ready yet. And a lot of folks say, well, we need to support him because white people are trying to bring him down. I guess I'll just die here so he can get elected. Oh, I forgot, he can't do a third term. God save us, we're so ignorant. I mean, black folk need to get to discover God. He's not in the White House. In fact, August 23rd, speaking of Sierra Liberia, on August 23rd will be the bicentennial of black folks burning the White House to the ground in 1814. So put that in your ear. I mean, so we worship the White House, and our ancestors burnt it right after the Battle of Bladensburg. So I'm amazed at our lack of consciousness, our lack of awareness, that we run after symbols that have nothing to do with us. The White House was a place that black women were raped and black children died in the lower quarters. The place is haunted.
Okay.
And we all want to be in there. That's crazy.
Dr. Short is very passionate about what he believes, y'all. I mean, that is clear. But so Dr. Short, before you leave us, what would you suggest that we should be doing in terms of the Ebola outbreak? What should we be doing?
What we should be doing right now is demanding that everybody that has it, that has Ebola or thinks they have it, that the president, we should have people tie up the phones for every government office and every media outlet demanding that medication be sent immediately to West Africa right now. No waiting. We want the exact same thing that those two crackers got down at Emory Hospital. Nothing more, nothing less. That's what we need to demand, not to wait. In fact, in addition to that, we should demand to know, we should demand that this treatment for Ebola be public. It not be proprietary, so it can't be a profit-making thing. You know what? This Ebola shit will disappear, pardon my language, if they couldn't make a buck off of it. That's how what they do. That this has to be sold to everybody for 50 cents or free.
That's not going to happen.
We can demand it happen the minute we find out that public money paid for the research for the CDC. That patent belongs to you and me. So since they can't pay us back for the development, then damn it, give us our dose if we need it. And if we want to spot our dose to someone in West Africa, that's our business. We need to stop begging these people and tell these damn white people, we're going to rock this place if you think we're going to go without a struggle. Or we'll follow T.D. Jakes and the other liars who keep you pacified, and then we'll just die off. I mean, black folks have a choice. Die or learn how to be people. If you say you believe in God, then you're a child of God. Why have these other people screw you for hundreds of years and invent stuff to kill you with? Then you say, please don't kill me. I know I'm inferior. Are you serious? I mean, God save us. I've got to go to my next show, people. We need to pick this up, but we need to do a whole thing on eugenics because Ebola is the tip of the iceberg. Depo-Provera kills, and it's the drug of choice for black women. And all over the world, they're wiping out our women. More women are dying every day from Depo-Provera than Ebola has killed every day. And its connection to AIDS. It's amazing that we tolerate this.
Well, we'll invite you back. Thank you so much for being with us, Dr. Short.
You're welcome.
Okay, y'all, that was Dr. Randy Short, and opinionated he is, but he's very informed. We thank you.
Yes, he is.
For hanging out with us. But, you know, y'all, it's so much with this Ebola. I spent literally, y'all, the whole day. I literally took 30 minutes before the show to go grab a burger and got back in my seat and was, like, at this all day researching for this show. And I'm just absolutely amazed. And, Christopher, you said you had some connections between Ebola and HIV or AIDS. Tell us about it.
In terms of them paralleling them or relating both pathogens, you have to keep in mind both of them are vectors that they said that were originated in the rainforest and in terms of chimpanzees and bats and so forth. But people, you have to be aware and you have to, again, read the fine print, infected. That, by default, is a scientific term meaning that something infected them. So if it's not a natural occurring or something that does not happen in that animal state and environment, that meant that there was some human intervention to create that disease pattern where it would be in an animal and then be transmitted to human, number one. Number two, when you take blood cultures of Ebola, anyone who has actively with AIDS in their blood system and it's an active pathogen or Ebola, both of them mimic low white blood cell, your CD4, your immunization cells, and the platelet count, and elevated liver enzymes. So these are supposedly two different diseases that basically mimic the same thing. And then lastly, you have to keep in mind, there's a lot of people don't know. Most infectious diseases usually has something, whether it's an agent or a detergent, something that can basically inactivate it, maybe not kill it, but it can inactivate it. Both AIDS and Ebola, at the state that you would see an active, if you drew blood, if you added sodium hypochloride, it would inactivate that virus. So logical sense. You still have to have a pharmaceutical product that would either slow or kill, and hopefully in the future cure a disease process like this once it gets beyond what you can do at the primary stage. But keep this in mind. Why wouldn't you then want to spend more money in terms of prevention versus after the fact? Because the bottom line is that if this detergent will eradicate it or inactivate it, then you could take it where it's supposed to be, the outbreaks are happening, use that detergent in those areas of the Congo and the Sudan, and it activate the disease. So that's one step in terms of, and that's inexpensive. So there definitely is a case, because it's documented in terms of pharmaceutical companies, Fortune 500 companies, that make money off pain and suffering of people. Last case in point, I know we now have affordable health care, but really that was never my issue. Being a practitioner, being a physician assistant, my issue has always been that people don't have access to care for preventative health care. If you don't give a person preventative health care, and then they end up getting high blood pressure, diabetes, and a host of other things, you have to deal with that as that happens. But you could save off 20 or 30% of those diseases if people had access to care before it happened. It's cheaper to do that than to have to give someone who doesn't have insurance open heart surgery. So I just wanted to put those things out there in terms of people have to understand a lot of this stuff is in I think the average American citizen probably does not understand the high priority of disease processes that they have been able to contain and inject or infect at will, to the point where they can also put it into germ warfare equally. But there is a lot of money in the pharmaceutical companies, particularly for the FDA pending some patents that they're getting ready to approve specifically for Ebola vaccine.
Wow. AJ Houston. AJ's phone line may be having problems. You know, but I spoke of earlier that many Africans were fleeing.
I need y'all to ponder something. Okay, now imagine that all these things that's going on since the Affordable Health Care Act was enacted, that alleviated a lot of these pharmaceutical companies from direct marketing to doctors' offices, the small offices before. So now you have all these people wanting an access to pharmaceuticals. So you create something else. So now you bring in the other people back in. So you say, okay, this isn't working. And the Affordable Health Care Act is not fully in effect yet. But you still see things like this Ebola scare and these other things that are not, it's not big events or giant events, but they are medical events. Good luck, man. They're medical events. So as long as you keep the medical events in the air, in the conscience, in the media, whatever they say about medical or Medicare or medical anything, people are willing to accept it because they don't want to get sick.
Right. Well, I agree. You know, I can see, though, If pharmaceutical companies are losing out due to Obamacare being implemented, I can see how they can go and create situations so that people will seek them out, you know. And so are we finding ourselves, as Dr. Short was saying, you know, going to be put in a situation where they're going to say that, you know, like the flu vaccine, all of us know every year they'll say, we only have this much supply. So you need to come out right now, right now. I remember last year when they did it here, every day they were on the news saying, you got to get your flu vaccine. The health department doesn't have anybody standing in line. You can go there and get it for free. And then all of a sudden, that went on for about a week straight. After that, all of a sudden they start saying the supply is low. The supply is low. And all of a sudden people start flocking to go get a flu shot wherever they could get it because they said that, you know, that the supply was low. And so are we looking at the same situation where pharmaceutical companies will be able to drive up prices, you know, when they say, when they're saying it needs rollout.
Let me get something on that. But, you know, if I can get a flu shot that didn't work, too, so. They always said the flu shot didn't work against whatever flu was there, and everybody was still rushing to get it, as though, well, I'll take the other one just in case.
Well, one of the interesting things about the AIDS, Ebola, and even influenza is that as the pathogen mutates and changes, AJ is right, what you were giving or the vaccine that was being given is really, it becomes defunct. It's really not doing any good because unless you know the virus that you're affecting and that you can see it killed in a lab, and they probably need to do some restudies, but the studies have shown that's why they're also telling you to get people who are further at risk to get the pneumococcal too. Because the influenza does nothing to pneumococcal, and pneumococcal does nothing to influenza. But the thing is that because the strains change, Ebola has five different strains, from the weakest to the most severe, which is the Zaire Ebola virus. So the thing is that you have to know, just because you would get Ebola doesn't mean you would need to be vaccinated, because the weaker strain, basically it's like influenza. Eventually, in a non-immunized, compromised individual, it's going to go away. You're going to be fine. So there is some implications to what people have been told and what people are willing to do just because the CDC, their government tells them this is something that you need to do, not understanding that in the day and time we live in, a lot of vaccinations that we get, because basically a vaccination is what's called an attenuated drug, meaning that they take a small portion of the virus itself into a controlled environment, and then they make a vaccine, and then they basically inject that back into you so your body will become immune to it. And Ebola, that's essentially what they're doing.
Wow. You know, let's go back one more time about the fact that a lot of Africans are afraid of the medicines that they're saying may help with Ebola. And I'm going to show you just how afraid they were. They said that there are a lot of Africans who are afraid of basically the healthcare system, period. Northern Nigeria basically has a history of resisting. Okay, that's it. Basically, they said that northern Nigeria has a history of resisting the campaign to eradicate polio, for example. With rumors circulating that vaccinations were a plot to sterilize Muslim women. So this is just how serious it is as far as Africans trusting, these cures for, polio and, Ebola and things like that. They said at least 9 polio immunization workers were shot to death in Nigeria in February of 2013. That was just a little over a year and a half ago, y'all. They shot 9 workers because they did not believe that what they were being given was what they were being given. And so all we're looking at the same situation today where these Africans are fleeing, this medical attention for Ebola out of fear that they're not going to be given what they're being told that they're going to be giving. That's scary, Christopher. That's just crazy. But they are probably onto something, and due to a history of being used as guinea pigs, they're not going to go for it this time. Doesn't that seem like what's going on?
There is. I think there's legitimacy in the fear or the questioning of what a particular government, because I think what they have experienced in the past, that's like the police and black folks. There has been a thing where there has been very legitimate things in terms of what has been going on before. So I think that because they probably don't have an advocate, and I think because of, like you said, those individuals that were killed as well. I think everybody. They're going to give you a vaccine. You don't have a portable lab pull out to actually test the vaccine to make it sure that what they're saying that it is, that that's actually the case. And then the other thing to that is that in general, poor people have a high suspicion because of what, there's factual government studies where the government took agents or they took pathogens and experimented on people without their consent. The Tuskegee, the syphilis, so that's not the first time.
You're right, that's not the first time. But, the U.N. said something that's puzzling me, and I'm looking at my notes here, and it says the U.N. Health Agency described it as the worst outbreak in 4 decades of the history of tracking this disease. But it's kind of like Dr. Short said, but we're talking about under 1,000 people. So do we really call it an epidemic, or is this propaganda to create hysteria and then, and cause us all to conform to maybe martial law or is it bigger than that, or am I blowing this out of proportion? But I don't know, y'all. I smell a rat on this one. I don't know. Something about me.
Well, money and corporate America and population control, it's a fact. People have to keep something in mind. Even back in the Native Americans, it wasn't only giving them smallpox and the massacres and the bounties that they put on men, women, and children. It was about population control, but it was also depopulation because of what the government and a lot of settlers wanted. So they came up with devious and very ingenious ways to eradicate and then also control the population. And then think about it. After you do those type of things and you instill fear, even when you want to extend the so-called olive leaf, not a lot of people are really going to buy into that because of what has been done, and there's nothing been done since then to really prepare. Really all they did with the Native Americans is they gave them a lot of money and land and let them have their own tribes, which, by the way, is probably some of the worst areas to live in because of the poverty and the disease and the alcoholism and so forth. So they, it's like trading one for the other.
I understand that this drug that they're talking about has not been fully tested. It hasn't been tested on animals yet. I'm looking for my notes on it. It has not been tested on animals yet. So, you know, a lot of people are up in arms about who should get the drug and who shouldn't get the drug and whether or not the two AIDS workers should have gotten it or should, the people that were sickest in Africa have received it. But it opens the door to who should get the drug if it's basically scarce, the healthcare workers, the children, the newly infected, and so on and so forth. But the problem becomes if the people are that fearful of trusting this medicine, how do you know that what they gave the doctors really what they go, what they gave the two Americans are going to be what they give the African? I mean, if we're really believing that the New World Order may be part of this, I mean, we know in all pharmaceutical trials there's the placebo and then there's the actual drug. So could it be a situation with that, you know, if they trust, you know, the people, the African people, that is, trust, you know, that the drug that they're being given is really going to help them, or will it harm them? That's just my thought on that.
But I think that is why they show those two individuals and the gowned up suits and all of that, because I believe that, like AJ says, the first lie is always the truth. Mm-hmm. So what they're trying to do is it's an early onset of brainwashing and making it a part of the culture. Because now this is what the news, the mainstream white media news said. I didn't see any medical records. I didn't see any laboratory reports. This is just something that they're saying. So we have to take at their word that it's Ebola and that they gave him a particular vaccine or medication that now miraculously he's going to live or it's going to prolong his life and or it's going to eradicate the Ebola. So I don't put too much stock. I believe half of what I see and almost none of what I hear. I mean, it has to be validated. And so I think that's – and you're going to see more cases of things that are going to happen, and they're going to say we gave them this experimental drug or the drug that the one Canadian pharmaceutical company is pending the FDA approval. And that's their buy-in, because once that happens and then a person mimics or has any type of Ebola symptoms, then they're going to give them that, whether it's really going to help them or not. So I think it's just an early onset of brainwashing people, because there's no way to know other than what we hear, and we have to either believe it or not believe it.
No way of knowing. The drug that they got was called ZMAP. That's spelled ZMAPP. It's reported to have been the drug that helped the two American AIDS workers, Dr. Kent Brantley and Nancy Reifel. But at the same time, again, like Christopher just said, how do we know? I mean, I think today, I think in anything that I'm being told today, I don't want to be the first one to run in and do anything. I think you definitely have to use a degree of discernment. You have to definitely be prayerful in your decision-making. I don't care what they say you got. do diligence in doing your research, you know, on these particular topics before you just jump in and say, I'm sick. They say I need to take this, even though it hasn't been tested, it hasn't been proven, and you just, you know, you're going to be the first, excuse the expression, guinea pig to take it. I think these African people are maybe onto something. They may have, through history, found out. And just because someone says that they're here to help us may not be, you know, what their real ulterior motive is or what their real motive is. So, you know, that's just food for thought in that. But it was just very, very interesting. You know, of course, if this pharmaceutical company is out of Atlanta, the CDC is out of Atlanta, like Dr. Short said, the people are being treated in Atlanta, you know, so all those Atlanta makes you kind of wonder. We know that Atlanta and a lot of, conversations is called Chocolate City. It's a lot of black people there, a lot of concentration of black people there. So be careful in all your decisions about all of this. That's all I'm saying about Ebola. Don't just take it on the surface. Do your research. Dr. Short promised to email anybody that wanted information about what he said tonight. His email is wrandyshort@gmail.com. That's wrandyshort@gmail.com. And he would pass on any information about the Ebola virus and what he quoted on the show earlier tonight. But one thing that they're saying about Ebola is that, you know, they prefer, instead of an actual burial, that the bodies be cremated, you know, which is very interesting. And so, Christopher, didn't we talk earlier this week about the fact that it is not airborne, even though a lot of people are afraid of it, which makes you wonder, if it's not airborne now, why are all the rubber rooms and the plastic rooms and all the covering and all that, if it can't be airborne? Why all the masks?
On one hand, medically, for just precautions that they put in place, but what people have to understand is that the spread of transmission normally is, they're saying, is usually through processes where it's blood, bodily fluid, similar to AIDS, and so forth. Now, there are scientific studies in the lab between pigs and monkeys where they quarantined them, infected the pigs, and they have said that it could have plausibly or possibly could have been aerosolized or in the air, and it could have become airborne. So they have some studies. Nothing that I have seen so far is definitive. Now, that doesn't mean that it cannot be spread that way. It just means that the study and the final results are not yet in. But, again, that is out there because they are trying to put that plug out there so that when they then want to come up, whether that's a vaccine or medication or whatever universal health precautions they want you to take, it ends up being about money because somebody is going to profit off of that. Now, some people don't even want to believe that, so to speak, that some of these diseases are man-made. But, again, when you look at how original vectors, being the rainforest animals, actually get this, it is very vague. It doesn't go into the disease process that they ate something in the forest and this is how they got it. It says infected. And to me, that means that you have someone who's actually infecting animals or infecting that animal, which then becomes the host. So there's too many unanswered questions. I mean, with certain things like with cancer, okay, you can pretty much definitively say a person smoked for 20 years, they drank. You can look at things and you can pretty much not just predict but actually look at it in the laboratory, and you can have a better percentage of where that came from. Did it come from tobacco products? Did it come from alcohol? Did it come from the environment? So forth and so forth. But Ebola is just has all the makings of something that was made in the test tube in a lab and then experimented on animals, and then it was the transmission occurred to human beings.
I agree. And you know what we know so far is that it's in Guinea, Liberia, Sierra Leone, and also Nigeria, and we know now it is also in the States because, you know, they brought two infected Americans to Emory University Hospital in Atlanta this week. So we know that it has the potential to be considered global because people travel, you know, via planes, and it can jump on one plane and be, you know, one place and, you know, crisscross the globe in little or no time if people don't know they're infected. So we have reason to be concerned. What we know that is basically already proven is that, well, I shouldn't say proven, let me take that word back, alleged that there are 1,779 people known to have been affected, and 961 people have already died of the virus. That's what we know. Or, listen, again, let me take that back. We don't know what is alleged. Slip on the tongue. What is alleged is that 1,779 people are known to have been affected and allegedly 961 have died. And what we understand is that basically from something that I researched here, and we're going to, again, everything has got to be proven to me tonight. I mean, this is just what research is saying, but I got to prove it all. They said it has a 90% fatality rate. Did you get that somewhere too, Christopher, that the fatality
yes.
rate is 90%? Wow.
Well, yes, but again, you have to know what you're dealing with, and you have to have as close to a definitive diagnosis. But usually only the folk, honestly speaking, that would have the money, that would have the access to the medical care, excuse me, to have the appropriate diagnostic test done would get it. Because you can think you have Ebola, but you may have cholera. You may have typhoid fever. You may have meningitis, hepatitis, viral. See, all those things, they kind of mimic the same things when they do a liver function test. You can have a low-grade fever or you can have a high fever. I mean, and so forth. And so I think the bottom line is that I think AJ was on to something when he said that the pharmaceutical and Wall Street was probably planning on something that would be their big ticket, because essentially the Affordable Health Care Plan and the Act actually decentralized a lot of the insurance companies. So we're talking about mega, dirty, rich, making corporations. And so now they're still dirty rich, but they can't be filthy rich. So now they want to get filthy rich again, so you have to set something up in terms of an enterprise that's going to bring you in untold money. And something like this would do, because if you can imagine, once the FDA finally approves something, that company is probably going to have a patent for 7 years before any other company can even get the formulary to produce the same kind of medication. And people need to understand that. Usually when you get a patent for a pharmaceutical product, you get 7 years. Nobody else can do anything. Nobody else can get a patent. Nobody else can produce anything that's synthetically made like you. So you got 7 years to make all you can make.
Wow, that is crazy. I mean, that's crazy money. And all they got to do, y'all, I mean, really, let's just be real. All they got to do to some people is just put it on the news. You see, and it is like, I mean, panic city. Most people don't research for themselves. Most people listen to the news and take everything, you know, to be fact. You know, a lot of what we get on the news is propaganda. And so can you imagine if they ran out tomorrow and said, you know, this stuff is killing people, and the only way that you can be saved is that you get, you know, some of these pills. Can you imagine how much money they could make? It's just like getting a flu shot if they told you that you had to go get the flu shot. I don't know if anybody's seen the movie Contagion. If you haven't, you need to go out and get it, because Contagion may explain to you just how crazy it can get if they do something like that. I mean, the people,
wow.
I mean, it got crazy. It got crazy. You know, and we're not saying it's going to happen. We're just saying it could happen. You know, just putting that out there that it could happen.
And you know what, just as a side note, I wanted to say, and what's sad about that is that although we live in a fast-paced, a data, a money, technology-driven world, for those of us that have a faith belief system and we don't pray, I mean, the Bible says watch and pray. So we're supposed to be abreast of these things that are happening, but I mean, if we actually serve a true and living God, and I'm speaking for myself as a not just a Christian, as a disciple. Christian is so generic that you can say one thing today and not be consistent in that tomorrow. But the Bible tells us that we should pray, and we should also seek God's faith, so that as we go through these trials and tribulations, we have something in addition to turn to, and that is more powerful than just the fear itself. And a lot of people, they're, I guess, for lack of a better word, they're resolved at just accepting whatever the government, the local, the federal, the national government says, and they don't want to do no homework research, and then they get mad at me when I question anything. They just say, well, they know, they this and they that. But I believe that I'm prayerful. And I seek the Lord so that, because I'm not going to be running around in circle in fear. And if I need to take a vaccine, I am. But if I don't, then I won't.
And, you know, sister, I really have to piggyback out that you are absolutely right. First of all, we must realize whom we serve and to whom we belong. And show us, I know Christopher just said Christian is a generic term, but if you believe in the Most High God and he, you know, is where you get your strength, in a situation of a crisis, first of all, we must know the Word of God says fear is not of God. And so we need to, first of all, study to show ourselves approved. So we got to come out of the TV and actually go look up these things for ourselves and see what's best for us. And we also know that a strong immune system can combat a whole bunch of stuff. So I think we definitely need to be thinking along the lines that, you know, for some of these things, these plagues, and the Bible said there would be plagues, that we have to have a strong immune system, and we have to put our faith in God. So, you know, all of that, you know, it definitely should be, you know, in the back of your mind that no matter what comes, greater is he that's in me than anything that's in the world. But we know that, you know, still we live in a time where things like this are occurring more often. One minute we hear the bird flu, the next minute we hear Ebola. Tomorrow we may hear something else. But we know that a strong immune system and our faith in God is something that we definitely need to have. So what, Christopher?
Yes, I was just agreeing with you.
Okay. And what we understand about the Ebola virus, y'all, by the way, is that the most vulnerable people are healthcare workers, family members who are caring for sick people with the Ebola virus, and so are other people. So, you know, you can be a non-family member and be caring for a friend with Ebola. So caregivers are going to be the most vulnerable people. And basically we understand when you're caring for someone with Ebola that you should always wear protective gear, especially when handling contaminated needles. So we know that. So we know to stay away from bodily fluids if people are infected by it, and always wear protective gear. And like we said earlier, there are some symptoms, of course, you know, sore throat, fever, that type of thing that you should always be aware of. But we're going to move on in just a second and talk about the relationship and bride update. We got some good news on that case today, but we don't want to move on before we mention everything about this because I really feel like something's coming with this. I really do. The fact that Liberia basically implemented martial law because of Ebola really concerns me. So I think that everybody needs to definitely get on the computer tonight, tomorrow, and look at basically everything that, you know, you can about Ebola and get a good understanding of what it is and how it could possibly affect your particular family. Now, one thing I found, Christopher, interesting about Ebola, they said male survivors, pay attention, y'all, to the connection between this and HIV. They said male survivors may be able to transmit the disease via semen for nearly 2 months, according to Wikipedia. Now, that's Wikipedia saying that. But male survivors, meaning they had it and survived it, may be able to transmit the disease via semen for nearly 2 months. That's a long time, y'all. So that sounds a whole lot like AIDS, doesn't it, Christopher, transmitting it via semen?
Yes, it does. And the incubation period is about the same time in terms of age, too. It's anywhere from 2 to 21 days. I mean, the ramifications of some of this stuff, there's so many holes in the story of Ebola because of other disease pathogens that I know that they're ubiquitous. They're all over. They're in the dirt. They're this or that. That I know that it's proven. I mean, there's like cats and toxoplasmosis. They keep cats away from pregnant women because they know that toxoplasmosis is a dangerous pathogen that cats have in their feces. So they keep the cat. So, but that's because it comes from the earth. It's in the earth. Mm-hmm. But they're not saying that the chimps or the monkeys are eating dirt, or that they're eating this, and this is how they're getting it. And so I go back to that because that's significant to me, because you have to have some kind of starting point. So if the starting point isn't where the animals get in a hold of it, then where are they getting it from?
I so agree with that. And I mentioned Russia earlier, if you missed it, y'all. Ebola can be biological, could be a biological weapon as far as being groundless. Russia's Federal Medical Biological Agency said today, that's SEMBLA, S-M-B-A. Basically, biological weapons, they said, are made in small laboratories which someone could easily camouflage. Russia's putting that out there today, y'all. And so, you know, they went on to say that the virus can be used in the form of a spray and used as a bioweapon. And so, you know, y'all, we got to be careful when we're making all these enemies because, you know, was Russia hinting to us, you know, that y'all keep messing with us, we can put this Ebola everywhere? I mean, we just don't want to keep messing with everybody. And then another thing of concern to me, should we be concerned about the borders being open? I mean, we're just, borders are pretty open. We talked about that for weeks, y'all. The borders are just pretty much wide open. All you got to do is get to a certain point, you know, certain areas, and, you know, we know that the borders are more open than others. That said, what if some of this is coming in the country via the border? What are we going to do?
Well, that is important to keep in mind. I mean, but that Canadian company, in terms of what you were saying with the bio defense, it's called, I think, Tecmira, which is the Canadian pharmaceutical company. The U.S. Department of Defense, their biodefense unit, has already paid out $140 million to that Canadian company to develop the TKM Ebola. So are they developing that for a cure? But that's the Department of Defense. So that's not a medical component of the government.
Wow. Prayer time. If you don't know, guys, you need to get to know him, Christopher. Seriously. What are they developing it for?
Well, I mean, the article talks about it. It's breaking down different aspects, facts about Ebola. But since the outbreak, or this contract was actually in the works, and it's the Canadian pharmaceutical company is still pending the approval of this medication to treat Ebola by the FDA. But in the meantime, and in the same breath, they've been given $140 million by the Department of Defense to develop biodefense aspects.
Mm. Wow. You know.
So in basically anything that can be harnessed, people have to keep this in mind. Some people actually don't care about how it's going to be used as long as they can make money off of it.
True.
Is the reason we have drug problems and all that other stuff, because they don't care about the implications of it other than they can make money off of it.
Mm-hmm. I agree. Well, listen, we're down to our last 27 minutes of the show. Christopher, you know, we had an update on the Renisha McBride story. Remember, y'all, when Renisha McBride was a 19-year-old Detroit girl that had gone out one night, gotten drunk, crashed her car, and then stumbled out of the car into a neighborhood in Dearborn, Michigan, where she knocked on this white man's door. Renisha was a 19-year-old black female. She knocked on the door of this white Dearborn hype man in Michigan and, you know, basically asking for help. I don't know where her cell phone was, but she was drunk and she was, you know, had just crashed a car, I guess a little out of it in terms of, you know, everything that was going on. And he came to the door. No one will ever probably know what the real exchange of words were between them, seeing she was drunk and obviously he, you know, was not a very nice person. And he somehow perceived her as a threat, even though he opened the door. And he shot her through the face. He shot her in the face with a 12-gauge shotgun. And Renisha died. But Theodore Wafer was found guilty this week of second-degree murder and manslaughter and manslaughter, and manslaughter in Renisha's case. And so he could face up to life in prison when he's sentenced on August 21st. And basically, you know, I just, with this case, always had a problem with understanding if she was on the porch by herself and you were confident enough to open the door and the screen door was between you and her, where was the threat? You know, and Mr. Wafer actually had to take the stand. And, you know, rarely in, you know, in the murder cases do you take the stand because, you know, most times your lawyers will advise you against it. But obviously this case was looking so bad for him that he actually got on the stand himself. And obviously his own testimony couldn't get him out of the situation because they found him guilty. What do you think of it, Christopher? What do you think of it, Christopher?
You know, I mean, I think they probably put him on the stand at that point because they thought that he might be able to give them a little bit of damage control. And I think they knew the outcome. I think they knew he was going to be convicted, but the goal was to ensure that he got the lesser of the charge that he could have received. And in this case, it was clear. I mean, the thing is that, okay, first of all, you grab your shotgun. There's a door between you and the individual. If you're that much in fear, you could have had the shotgun but also been on the phone calling 911. But when you kind of choose to, I think, take that situation to another level, when other than somebody intoxicated knocking on your door, he didn't say she was kicking the door in, ripping out the screen, trying to get in, trying to get at him. I mean, I've been in situations where, yeah, I felt threatened, but I called the police. Now, because it's not imminent. If once it becomes imminent and it's a clear pattern that this person is trying to harm you, that's one thing. So, I mean, it was, like, really worthless for him to get on the stand because what was he going to say?
You know, that shooting took place less than 4 months after the George Zimmerman verdict. You know, everybody knows George Zimmerman was found not guilty of killing Trayvon Martin. So, you know, a lot of people are speculating, was he thinking, you know, this is just going to be another case to stand your ground, it's going to go for, you know, right for me because I'm Caucasian and she's African American? I don't know. But this was in Michigan and George Zimmerman was in Florida. And a lot of people have speculated it, that if he had been in Florida, he probably would be a free man. But this happened in Dearborn Heights, Dearborn Heights, Michigan, which is a suburb of Detroit. And so a lot of people were saying online that Dearborn Heights is the type of community, when you call the police, they show up, not unlike Detroit. When you call the police in Dearborn Heights, they come. And so many were speculating online that, knowing that, from being a resident there, why didn't he just call the police? Why didn't he just slam the door on the young lady, you know, and then call the police? And so, you know, I guess that's something Mr. Wafer's going to have a lot of years to think about. But the young lady, you know, she won't get her life back. But hopefully her family will have some peace in knowing that he can't do that to anybody else. But, you know, Christopher, I was just at a loss, though. You know, she's 19 years old, and, you know, just because you're intoxicated and you may talk loud and, your language may be slurred, I don't know, but where is the threat from a 19-year-old female that's drunk standing at your door?
Well, I mean, I know some situations can yield, you know, hard to say how this or that, but I do believe sometimes the actions of individuals, and I think she was just honestly seeking some assistance after the accident and so forth. But I think, unfortunately, the mindset of some individuals and a lot of people are they sometimes move too quick in certain situations.
Yeah.
Hey, it's one thing somebody's trying to run you down with their car. Okay, that's instantaneous. But this was not, I believe, to the degree where the use of that lethal force or force at all dictated, when it just seemed like there were other options available. But I also think that sometimes the individual who's in the midst of that situation, a lot of time they act in some sense because of not because this is like a malicious, premeditated, and, oh, I'm going to do this and get away with it. But sometimes things happen because people don't think that other people are going to do anything about it. And this story got a lot of play and exposure because a lot of good people, including your show and so forth, pushed that agenda and they pushed that envelope. But so many stories that occur where individuals, like I can't remember the young man's name, but there was a similar incident. He wasn't intoxicated, but he had been in an accident, and he was knocking at a woman's door, and she called the police, and then he ended up dead. So the bottom line is that what is this with the, I don't know, immediate or rash reaction that some people have, and then after the fact, it's not like even I'm sorry, I made a mistake. They're actually trying to justify their actions. And this gentleman was really trying to justify. He wasn't saying, I did wrong, I probably, you know, moved too quick, you know. And so I think what it does say is that it is good when unfortunate situations like this happen and they do receive a lot of advocacy because I think that the outcome in terms of the jury and just the whole criminal justice system may have been different if it had not received the exposure that it had.
I think I agree with you. Basically, they said Wafer testified at the trial and said that he grabbed his 12-gauge shotgun because he feared for his life. He said he just reacted. However, the police say that when they questioned him shortly after the shooting, he said that it was an accident. So did somebody advise him to change his story? Don't know. But he actually got on the stand and said something totally different from what he had told the police initially, you know, that it was an accident. And, you know, how do you accidentally shoot a young woman in the face when you're standing behind a screen door? It's not like you're in a scuffle. So, you know, I guess that didn't hold water, or maybe he felt like, you know, maybe that wasn't a whole water, so he decided to change his defense. But it didn't fly. And so, you know, a lot of people in Detroit were outraged because it took them 2 weeks to charge him. And most people kind of felt like if that had been, you know, a situation of a black man shooting a young white, you know, woman through the door or through a screen door, that the police would have immediately charged them. But this particular man, it took them 2 weeks to charge him with second-degree murder. And which makes me wonder, what's the difference between first-degree murder and second-degree murder? Why would they charge him with second-degree manslaughter as opposed to just first-degree murder? You know.
Well, I do know, not being an attorney, I do know that first-degree, there's a lot more on the table. If that particular state has capital punishment, that could be on the table. But if the state doesn't, the worst that you could get for first-degree murder would probably be life without life or two lives without the possibility of parole. But when you reduce that down and you go manslaughter or basically second-degree murder, what you're dealing with then is that if the state has a capital punishment, it's already off the table. So what you're trying to do at that point is, as an attorney, predict, well, what's the worst-case scenario that the jury could come back? Then you put into motion what you're going to try and do to get a lesser charge. So he pretty much got that because since it wasn't like he went out and shot somebody, they were at his place, he probably received a little bit of quote-unquote credit because he was at home. She did knock on his door. But what ensued after that in terms of him shooting her with a shotgun kind of changed things, and I believe that the jury at that point knew that, well, okay, he did shoot her. And was it really probable cause? Nah, probably not. So that's probably why that went that way. And the jury knew that they wasn't going to get the whole jury out of there unless they agreed upon something. And it was probably the lesser charge and just do manslaughter.
Probably right. You know, after the George Zimmerman trial, there was several copycats. That the young man that you spoke of, you know, the police shot him, but, you know, many people wonder what the heck happened with that. There was a situation with a young boy where the neighbor, the boy was a teen, and the neighbor believed that he had broken into his house. And so one day the teenage boy goes to retrieve the garbage from the outside in front of the, you know, how you have your garbage services picked up at the curb. The little boy went to the curb to pick the garbage, and the neighbor came out with a gun and started accusing him of breaking in his house and stealing some things from him. And when the little boy realized, oh, my God, things are going to get bad, he turned and tried to run, and the man shot him down. And he was charged. And in this situation with Renisha McBride, same thing. So you just wonder, you know, when people saw George Zimmerman get off, that that's been off a copycat effect, with people thinking that, you know, stand your ground meant, you know, that you could just take the law into your own hands and, you know, all you have to do is perceive a threat and then, you know, you have the right to kill somebody?
Well, unfortunately, some juries and the way that the criminal justice system is set up, and the word we use all the time, fear factor, depending on the county that you're in or the jury that you get, they may be sympathetic, even though they know a straight-up malicious crime was committed. And they may be sympathetic and totally let you off.
Wow. See, you know, the thing is, stand your ground, y'all, and I've said this many times, Center Stage has probably done more shows on stand your ground than any other show. You can go back and look at them in our archive. But stand your ground is called different things depending upon what a part of the country you live in. Castle Doctrine in some areas, Make My Day in other areas, and stand your ground in even other areas. But that's it. You really got to pay attention to the law because it varies from state to state to state as well. But I think the thing about stand your ground is it's just too vague. And I think a lot of situations, people use stand your ground as their defense. But in my opinion, if you have the room to retreat, whether it's necessary in your state or not, I would do so. If I had an option whether to take a man's life or not, I would choose not to, even if that caused me to have to run from the situation. I think I would, just because I wouldn't want that person's blood on my hands. And so in a lot of these situations, it seems to be this whole macho thing about I don't have to retreat. There was even a situation in Houston where a young woman shot a man, and he was doing something sort of, but you can only see the video. You can't hear the audio. But there was kind of some type of exchange with them right after this as well. And she was a black lady, and it was a black man. But there was some exchange in a gas station. And in my opinion, if you look at the video, the lady had an opportunity to retreat before she went to her truck and got the rifle and shot the man. And so I just think sometimes you got to use a bit more judgment in situations and decide whether or not it's worth it. Sometimes it seems like today people don't think of consequences. They just react. Would you agree with that, Christopher? People are just reacting now and not even thinking consequences for tomorrow at all?
Yes, they are. And like with road rage and everything else that's right up there with what you're saying, is a shame and a travesty. And I think I don't know if it's just the stressors, the anxiety that people are under, because, I mean, the Bible says all of us are tempted. We're tempted every day. And, I mean, there, like you said, there's been situations where I could put my dukes up and fight, but that's not what my first response is. And the escalation of any type of violence or defense only is when I cannot get out of the situation. I mean, there's situations where, in a sense, you know, you can take that person. But if there's an option for me to walk away or to go around or negotiate that, I would prefer to do that, A, because you don't know who you're dealing with these days. I got a family. I got other responsibilities. So unless I absolutely have to defend myself or escalate any type of violence or defense, I'm going to choose not to. And I've been in those situations.
You said what?
And I've been in those situations where I've chosen not to be violent and walk away from it. You know, calling names, this and that, because sometimes you end up with ignorant people. You end up with people who flip you off. They want to do this, and they want to car race. Well, I just pull over and let them go. It's not worth it.
I think sometimes you just have to really think, just like Christian was said, about your family. and what you have to live for. You know, Mr. Wafer has got a lot of years now to think about how much different his life could have been had he just shut the door and called police. And I think just being a hothead today is just the wrong thing. I think, you know, one thing you have to pray for is a cool spirit. I mean, seriously, because it's so many different situations in the course of a day that could set you off. But at the same time, you have to think what you have to live for, what you have ahead of you, and that particular situation isn't worth it. I was years ago in a situation when I was in a McDonald's, and I was in the drive-thru, and a lady intentionally put her car in reverse and hit me. And first of all, I was in total disbelief. And then when I got out and I looked at the car, and I said to the lady, "You just hit my car." She looked at me like I was speaking a foreign language, and she told me I did not hit you. I was like, "Are you serious? You just hit my car." Anyway, we went back and forth. But I looked in the young lady's eyes, and, y'all, I didn't see nobody at home. And that was the point when I looked at my car, assessed that there was no real damage, and I left. Because I realized sometimes people's lives are so messed up. All they want to do is take it out on somebody else. And I, to this day, I don't know what that young lady's motivation was for hitting my car. Never saw her before in my life. You know, the situation could have escalated because, again, when I looked at her, you know how you look at somebody and they just have nothing behind their eyes? It was that kind of stare that was in her face. And, immediately I thought to myself, you know, what do I do? But I had, in my opinion, so much to live for. And I thought, I don't know what her situation is. I don't know what she's on. I don't know if she's on some drugs or if she has a weapon in her car. And at that point, I decided, Carrie got more to live for. This car ain't worth it. This car ain't got no damage. I'm out of here. And I just left, and I left. I was so angry, I was trembling. But I had to think about that there are so many demons in this earth, and the devil has his ability to send them your way. And I just really to this day consider that young lady one of those situations, because we fight not against flesh and blood. And so at that point I decided it just wasn't worth it. And so I would say to anybody who's looking at this self defense or stand your ground as a motive to take another person's life, be careful. Because, you know, if you just stop and take a second and think about it, you know, Renisha probably was drunk. She was probably disoriented. Her toxicology report revealed that she was drunk. But she was probably disoriented. She was in a strange neighborhood. She probably didn't know where to go. And she manages, after a car accident, to stumble onto somebody's porch drunk, and that's the response you give to a 19-year-old kid? That was just unbelievable to me, that whatever was going on in his head was so off-centered that he thought that was the right thing to do, and he felt that that was justified. Christopher, I from day one, I felt that way.
It's hard, and I was trying to think, you know what? What could he have been thinking? I mean, in terms of the actual threat, I mean, was he, I mean, and maybe some people in that situation, and Mr. Wafer, maybe he thought he was really threatened, but I mean, his first thing was that he just pulled the trigger. I mean, he pointed and pulled the trigger. This wasn't a, okay, what is she doing? Or this wasn't even, okay, I'm going to shoot her, but I'm going to actually try not to kill her. I'm going to try and aim lower. I mean, if you're a gun owner pointing a weapon, depending on if you point it up, in the middle, or down, can the outcome can mean, will that person just be injured, winged, or will you kill them, or will you inflict, you know, great bodily harm? So, I mean, it's hard, and there's a lot of theories, I'm sure, that's out there, but the fact remains is that he did pull the trigger. And I don't know what was going on, but like you said, he's going to have an awful lot of time when he's sentenced on the 21st to think about what he did, because I don't know if it's just mental illness. I don't know if it's just willful wanton. I don't know what it is, but you do have to be held accountable for your actions. But in this case, just for the life of me, I don't know if we'll ever know why he pointed the weapon in the sense that he did, and he fired upon her when she
it wasn't, apparently she wasn't a threat at all.
And, to be honest, what happened to a warning shot? You know, first of all, you couldn't have been in,
right.
in life because the screen door was still between you. You could still have shut the main door, and you could have fired a warning shot. I think any drunk person alive can still respond to a warning shot.
Yeah.
So Mr. Wafer, I don't know. I don't know what the situation is, but, now you lose your home, you lose your family, and you get to spend a long time, hopefully, they'll come back with the right sentence for you, and you'll spend a lot of time thinking about how your life could be different had you not done what you did to Renisha McBride. Well, listen, guys, you know what? We talked about it only tonight. We talked about the update on the Renisha McBride story. I've had a great night with you guys. Christopher, AJ had to leave us early, and we also want to thank Dr. Randy Short for being with us. What an awesome guy he is. Wow, he's never been on the show before, but I really enjoyed his insight. I mean, he's
raw, and he's to the point. He doesn't beat around the bush.
Yes, he is. Very opinionated, and he may be back with us next week. He asked us to look at the topic eugenics, and that is something we have not covered on Center Stage, so maybe next week we may cover the topic eugenics, depending upon where he's going to be next week. If he's able and available to be with us, we may cover the topic eugenics. Also, a reminder, y'all, the views and opinions of our guests do not necessarily reflect that of Center Stage, the host, or our advertisers. Also, join us here, again, right here, same channel, same that station, Center Stage, from 8 to 10 p.m. Central, 9 to 11 Eastern. This is what we do. Tell a friend, tell a family member, tell a co-worker, church member, come check out the show. Center Stage, right here on Blog Talk Radio. Okay, guys, we're going to get out here a little early tonight, and we're going to give you some music. That was a tough show talking about Ebola. I hope you guys heard me. Definitely do your research. Find out, is it all about the money? Okay, we'll see you next week. Bye-bye. Thank you.
beats.